All right, so we're in 1 Corinthians 15, A Glimpse of Hope, Part 3. I thought it was going to be a trilogy, but it's going to be a four-logy. I don't know what a four-part series is. But I guess like with good trilogies nowadays, they turn that third one into a two-part, three or so four movies anyway. Whatever I can get out of this. What's that? A four-pole? That'll work. That'll work. I know it's like four-peat is the basketball or championship tradition. All right, well, we're getting to fall, but how many of you guys planted a garden this summer? Anybody planted a garden this summer? So were you successful? What did you plant?
I just
planted sunflowers. Okay. We'll get back to that in a second. So what did you guys plant? Did you guys plant?
Tomatoes.
Okay.
Peppers.
Cabbage.
Kale.
We got a farm. Did you harvest any?
Yeah. A little. It wasn't greatly successful, but
The animals gleaned a little bit. A very nice tomato yesterday. Okay. Excellent. Any other gardeners on this side, or is it only?
We feed our vegetables to our chickens.
Okay. All right. All right. Okay. But if we eat at the place household, we say like, you wash this, right? This is from the chicken poop. What have you miraculously grown?
Tomatoes and pumpkins, but the big thing is pumpkins. When they're huge, the whole pumpkin patch just appears.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Wow, that's pretty interesting. How does that make you feel for the tomatoes that you planted? He's got random tomatoes. I know sometimes my tomatoes that I've lovingly babied, you know, like just don't make it. Don't make it. So, any gardeners on this side? Ronnie? Would you grow? Were you successful this year? Okay. Okay. But just enough. We get a good variety. All right, now for those that have planted, how many of you planted out of a seed? Well, we already know Troy's planted out of seed indirectly. Did you plant your sunflowers from seeds? Okay. We tried that, and then I noticed that the birds like pecked it up, and I was like, oh, I guess you have to like protect them or something. I don't know if you had that issue. Was yours outside or was it inside? Okay. 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 I guess that was good enough. Did you guys plant from seeds or? Okay. Mostly from seeds. That's where we're going to turn our attention to this morning. So I wanted to kind of get us in the gardening mood. But well, I know at least the experts that we can talk to when we get to what we're going to get to, what Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 15. So last week, Paul has been talking about the resurrection, and he had some logical arguments for the resurrection about why, you know, it's not incomprehensible to think about there being a resurrection. But if there is a resurrection, what are the implications for it? And we even looked at a few church body life issues, some that we're like not sure what that means for the, you know, baptism for the dead, and how we can interpret that to other means. But regardless of, you know, where one lands, right, you're either compelled to believe in the resurrection or to reject it altogether. And if we reject it altogether, especially as believers, then we are to be, as Paul said, most pitied. It just is incompatible with our faith. So We'll continue on with our lesson in verse 35. And as kind of a response to the resurrection, Paul says, let me see. Paul says, but someone will ask, how are the dead raised? With what kind of body do they come? You foolish person, what you sow does not come to life unless it dies. And what you sow is not the body that is to be, but a bare kernel, perhaps of wheat or of some other grain. But God gives it a body as he has chosen, and to each kind of seed its own body. For not all flesh is the same, but there is one kind for humans, another for animals, another for birds, and another for fish. There are heavenly bodies and earthly bodies, but the glory of the heavenly is of one kind, and the glory of the earthly is of another. There is one glory of the sun, and another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars, for star differs from star in glory. So, right at the beginning, we see kind of two questions that Paul supposes that someone might ask regarding the resurrection. Like, what questions that a person would ask? So what are those two questions that a person may ask?
How are the dead
raised? All right, question one. Question two. What's that? Yeah, so, you know, what kind of body would they be raised to? Right? You know, how does it work? Especially with kind of the first one, how are the dead raised? Or maybe even more specifically, like, how is that even possible? And so if you think about kind of the Paul's audience of talking to the Greeks, they would have had an understanding or a belief that a person's soul was immortal, but the body was corrupt, that the soul lives on, but the body does not. And Jews similarly believe that while the body not necessarily is corrupt, but the body returns back to the dust of the earth, and that the soul of man returns to God. And so just asking that question, right, how can a body that goes into the ground and decompose, or a body that maybe is burned, you know, as a cremation, how can that body be raised? And then that kind of leads to the second question, with what kind of body do they come? So if a person is resurrected, right, it can't be the same body, could it? You know, when if you stumbled across a body that had been left, that had been, you know, either died as an accident or whatever means, but if you stumble across a body, you'll find a carcass that has decomposed. And so then the question is, and then again, some people, if they are cremated, so then how like, what kind of body then is a person going to have if they are going to have a resurrected body? And I think that's even for us, you know, sometimes we think of the questions like, well, how, God, how are you going to make that work? Or, you know, what is it going to look like? Like, what are we gonna look like in the future? And so, how does Paul respond to those two questions?
Seems kind of harsh in his first response.
Okay. So yeah, he says, "You foolish person."
I'm glad I didn't ask those questions.
Yeah. Now, who's he addressing? All right, when he's talking about the resurrection, he's addressing the church, but he's addressing specifically those that would deny the resurrection. So he's kind of talking to those that are skeptical about the resurrection. If you deny the resurrection, it's not that you deny it because, like, you're stubborn or unwillful. It's like you have a problem with the resurrection. There are some things in faith, you know, I guess we don't have to open too many cans of worms, but there are just certain things in our walk, right, that we either have to resolve as, like, you know, yield and say, well, this is the way I believe that God has said he's done it, but, you know, maybe as a logical person, I just don't understand how it could happen. A lot of that has to do with miracles, things that God supernaturally does that sometimes we just have to submit to. There's questions that people have arguments over, like how old is the earth? And from a logical, you know, from one person's viewpoint, it would seem like, well, this is the way that the earth has transpired over a certain amount of years. And then to somebody else, it looks different. And so at one point you have to say, well, if this is a matter of faith, and if this is a matter of what Scripture says, then I need to yield my own beliefs to what the Scripture says. It doesn't mean I get rid of logic or arguments, but it's sometimes my perspective and my perception. And Paul addresses that as a person who is foolish, right? Who is not walking the path of wisdom, but walking in their own path. And so he's not talking to people who are asking questions out of curiosity. That's okay. Like it's okay for us to wonder about what heaven is going to be like. But if you're wondering what, you know, heaven's going to be like with skepticism, I mean, probably a big one is, you know, sometimes, and maybe you've even had it in your own hearts, right? Well, I remember talking to my grandfather, who wasn't a believer, but one of the hangups that he had, and this is, you know, was that he just thought like eternity, like what would you do in eternity? Like, it just seems like, you know, I get bored, you know, on a long summer break or something, you know. Are we gonna be like our kids who are like, there's nothing to do, right? And God's gonna be like, I got stuff for you to do, right? I don't want to do what you want me to do, you know. So it's not gonna be like that, right? But that's how we think in our own human terms of like, well, eternity. I mean, what, like, are we gonna just run out of stuff? Or, you know, we think in those, in that mindset. And so, you know, Paul is just saying you're thinking incorrectly. But it's okay for us to, again, like, be curious, but not curious with a skepticism that it's going to be bad. No, it's going to be something that we can't fathom and something that will be full of joy. Even worshiping God, it's like, we'll be different. We won't be, you know, we'll be there and fully focused and ready to do so. And so, you know, is there a way, though, that we can understand how a dead person was raised, even if it was explained? Right? I mean, is there a way, like, well, how did the whole resurrection happen? I mean, could God, like, tell us how he did it? I mean, it's like, you know, how do we get to the moon? Like, at some point, you're like, all right, I got the basics. But, like, if a scientist starts telling you the details about what's in the rocket ship, and let me just tell you about the controller, you're like, all right, I'm out of here. I'm done. Right? And so if God was to explain any of that, like, I mean, we would just be like, okay, I don't get it anyway. And so that's a, you know, a part, like, in our foolishness, it's not even the question that we should be asking. Like, well, how did you do it? It's just beyond our comprehension. And then if something is a new creation, how can we speak of it in old terms, right? If there is a resurrected body, and again, we don't know how much the Corinthians knew at that time. Do they know when Jesus was resurrected, how the disciples didn't recognize him and then yet recognized him? It was something like similar but different about Jesus. But if this is a new thing, right, if our bodies are decomposed or our bodies are ash, right, it's got to be some sort of new creation. So, you know, how can we talk about a new creation even in the old way of thinking? That just presupposes like our new resurrection will be just like the way things are here on earth. And Paul is almost saying, like, you're not thinking about things the way that you should be thinking about them and how God wants us to think about them. So again, he says, you fool, directs that, but he doesn't dismiss it. He's just like, you know, that's not something that I'm not even going to talk about. So he does kind of turn the conversation to things that, you know, are understood, right? Things that they would be able to comprehend. And he talks about things that are sown. So what are things that are sown? Not S-E-W-N, but S-O-W-N. What are things that are sown? I guess you could ask the question, what does it mean to sow? What's that? Crops, okay. This idea, we kind of hear the term sow. What do we think of?
Well, ideas are sown.
Ideas are sown?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, now you're getting theoretical. I'm talking about literal. But it's true.
If you hear something enough, people start to believe it, even if it's not true.
That is true. Right, correct. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But for us to understand how ideas are sown, what are physical things that are sown?
Seeds.
All right, so seeds are sown. And that's kind of the idea that one would think is that right when, you know, the parable of the seeds that are sown or the seeds that are cast out or are scattered. And there's more that goes into it. Some would say that some cultures think that just that type of planting is wasteful, but a purposeful planting of seeds in whatever manner is the idea that Paul is talking about. But he uses that kind of language as far as like something that is sown to be able to then talk about things that, you know, make sense for us. So he turns to nature, and specifically he turns to that of a seed. So how is a seed produced? How do you get a seed? So some of you guys like planted seeds. How'd you get this? How do you get the seed? What's that? Okay, I got a lot of things. So I heard from a flower, from the original plant, okay? So seed comes from a plant, and then plant grows, and then do you know what it produces? Before that, in between the plant and the seed stage, what's that? Okay, so there's a flower, right? And then the flower is, you know, and there's different things, you know, different ways. But if you think about it, like the butterfly or bees, right? And they go to one flower, so they're attracted to the flower. But in that process, right, they can pollinate another flower. And then there is kind of a reproductive system within. And then when the seed is pollinated, or when the plant is pollinated, it produces a seed. And then the seed is usually encased in a fruit, and sometimes within a casing, and then that casing opens up and the seed is scattered through different means. Now, the whole idea, I mean, it's even wonderful to think about, like, the whole idea about fruit. What's the purpose of fruit? Like, what do we do with fruit? We eat fruit, right? And so when we eat fruit, just like Troy's chickens eat the vegetables, right? Then they scatter his vegetable seeds around there. And so this indirect scattering, so that is the way that seeds are, and sometimes seeds are cast through the air. But that's kind of the whole idea, right? So, but you have this seed that is produced from this plant. And so, I don't know if I was going to show a, because I thought it was just kind of cool, but it's going to be a little small screen, so you're going to have to, we couldn't get our big screen to work. What's that? That's why you sit up front, yes. So, let's see. Maybe we'll make it darker to, and we'll see if, we'll see if I can. All right, let's see here. Ooh, I didn't listen to this with the music earlier. All right, so I don't know if you. Okay, this is a kidney bean seed.
Can you tilt it forward?
Oh, this way. Sorry. We're gonna pay. It's growing. Yeah, so it's day. I think we got 25 days of this. So don't worry, it's gonna go quicker. It's going. It's growing. You can do it. I know the things that we don't think about. Then when you do like pause and think, you're like, that's pretty amazing, isn't it? And it's just a little kidney bean that you're like, yeah, it's a kidney bean. I hated kidney beans. And I like them now, but.
Where's Canada? Not yet, day 10.
Day 14. I know. And at some point you're like, we get it. It's growing. It's growing. All right. So we'll pause it there. I like the music though. All right. It's funny in the comments. Does anyone know what that is? Okay. What's that? I guess it's like the way it grows. You know, it kind of grows like as it grows up, it kind of grows. Yeah. And it says something like attracted to like the red light wave spectrum or something. So probably maybe where a light source is, but it does look like it's like dancing as it's going up. And then it's kind of showing all the roots and that. But anyway, well, there's a ton of these videos. Pretty similar. There's sunflowers, you know, things like that. But pretty cool when you kind of think about it and you pause. All right. So you've got, again, from like a kidney bean, right? If you think kidney bean, typically in chili. I don't know what else you have kidney beans in. It's always in chili, right? What's that?
Rice.
Isn't that red beans and rice? Or is a red bean a kidney bean? No, I thought it was just I thought it was a different bean. No. What's that? What'd you say?
I said, did you need those videos start with chickens?
Start with chickens. I did want to, I was hoping to find one that like had like the plant dying or something, but I don't think you could. There were some dying plant ones, but those are sadder. All right, so we'll go back. So we want to talk about kind of you starting as a seed and then kind of growing up, right? So, in verse, 37, Paul explains, right? He says, we don't scatter the body of what we are planting. Almost kind of like thinking, like, when you plant, you want to plant. Now, you can buy, this was kind of asking, like, did you guys, whoever had a garden, did you start with seed? Because you can start with, like, I don't know what they call it.
Transplants,
okay. Gives you a little head start, right? If you start from seed, you're kind of going from something that like looks like nothing to what it ends up reproducing. And even just like the video, seeing that with all the roots that go down and then the stalk that comes up and the leaves and even producing a flower is almost recognizable what you have. And even if you have different seed, sometimes I think we're over COVID, we had those little, I forget what they were called, those little balls that like you can put a seed in. Have you guys ever seen those? They come in like in a little tray. You can buy them. What's that? And so we bought some seed and we kind of like some seed got mixed up and you're like, I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know the different seeds. I'm sure some people can look at a seed and tell one what that'll produce. But a lot of times you just don't know until you plant it and you have to wait, for it to produce what it's going to produce. But he says we start with a seed. We don't start with the body of whatever it is that we're doing. He uses that language. In other words, like we wouldn't like cast out the plant to grow something. We would cast out the seed. It starts out as a mere seed. And then he says in verse 38 that God is the one who gives the plant its body, kind of explaining, how that works. Not meaning like you could plant any seed and then it doesn't represent what it started with, but it's God who produces that. I mean, even just watching the video, you're like, there's something more going on. I mean, it is a natural process, but it's something like amazing. Like, how did that evolve?
Is this the section where you spend 8 weeks in seminary?
Is this?
Because he never does. He says a spiritual body, but who can comprehend the spiritual body having never realized the spiritual or seen one? Or, it doesn't say, it's going to have a head and two hands. He really never quite gets, he just says it's going to be a spiritual body.
Correct. Right, right.
We have no relation.
Correct, yeah. And so, I think it's possible, right? But Jesus represented himself as a body.
Yeah.
Is his heavenly body different? You've got visions of heaven, and people are wearing white robes. And so for others, it's a vision of, so they are represented as a human body. Angels, right? The way that they represent themselves are always, and that'd be kind of the interesting thing, but it's usually like different animals, a face of a lion or face of an eagle, and then a face of a human. Sometimes it's like, does it resemble that, but just a little different? And so you've got these ideas of like, of something that is represented to what God's earlier creation was. And I would have to think that if God created something, It's like if we were to create some sort of art piece and you're like, I didn't quite get that right. It's not what God did, because when he created it was very good. But I'm saying if we did something and then we wanted to make it better, we usually don't ditch it altogether, right? We usually keep lots of components and then build off of that to improve upon it, to make it better. And that was part of God's all conception. Again, not that that's what God did, but I'm saying that there should be some continuity, consistency with what God is doing. But I even think, bless all those chemistry teachers that taught the periodic table. Did you guys all do the periodic table? Not saying you can do the periodic table now, but we've all learned at some point the periodic table. And so all the elements, and you just think with just, one more proton here or one more electron there, it's a whole new element. Will, when things are recreated, do we have a whole new periodic table that we're working with? I don't know. Those are things that I would think not, but maybe so, And so when you introduce something different, right, it's like when you're introduced to a new spice, you're like, I haven't tasted that before. You're like, but I like it. So specifically Indian food, it's like, ooh, that's something I'm not used to. I like that. So anyway. So it then expands upon this idea, right, of different bodies related to different kinds of animals, right? Each after their own kind. When you hear that, what does that make you think of? Yeah. So let's go to Genesis 1. Because I want to make this connection. It's interesting kind of thinking back, and I haven't really made this connection before. We went through Genesis 1. The beginning of our study, whenever that was, whenever we started this. And so we won't go through the whole thing, but let's go starting with verse 10-ish. I guess we'll just get that. So verse 11. And God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit, in which is their seed, each accounting to its kind on the earth. And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed according to their own kinds, and trees bearing fruit, in which is their seed, each according to its own kind. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the third day. I mean, it's almost like either Paul was specifically referencing this idea, but the fact that, this idea of the seed and the fruit yielding to the plant and the tree has within it this whole idea of creation, right? The seed contains the coating that will create all the plants and the trees, but it's the seed that doesn't resemble what the plant and the tree will be in its full maturation. Although when it's made, it is fully matured. With seed and with everything ready to bear its fruit in its own time. So you have that, and Paul leverages that idea, right? You have a seed, but it doesn't even look like the fruit, or it doesn't even look like the plant or the tree that it's going to make. Verse 14, and God said, let there be lights in the expanse of heavens to separate the day from the night. Let them be signs for the seasons, for days and years, and let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens. And it was so, and God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night, and the stars. And God sent them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good, and there was evening, and there was morning, the fourth day. There's a reason I read that. We'll get to that later. And God said, let the water swarm with swarms of living creatures, right? Because Paul was talking about the creatures and how they're different in each of their own kind. And let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens. So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarm according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth. And there was evening, and there was morning, the fifth day. What was the command to the animals of the air and the sea? Be fruitful. All right, so you got this idea of fruitful, this fruitfulness of the fruit trees that were explained earlier. He's using similar language, God is, in this idea of creation and recreation. And how are birds, right, recreated? I say recreated, but you know, what do birds start out before they're birds? What? They're an egg, right? So kind of like the seed, they're an egg that looking at an egg, you might not know what egg it is unless it's the size or color. I mean, eggs are a little bit more variety, I feel like, than seeds, but maybe I'm just not in that world. But in that sense, the bird doesn't look anything like the egg that it starts with, right? And the egg is a shell, but anyway, so it's in a protective idea. But that's kind of where it starts. We have the same language, same things that God used in Genesis 1 that Paul will use to kind of talk about the resurrection. And God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things and beasts of the earth according to their kinds. And it was so, and God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds and the livestock according to their kinds and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our own image, after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish and the sea and the birds of heavens, over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the heavens, over every living thing that moves on the earth. And God said, behold, I've given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of the earth and every tree with seed in its fruit. Again, just like that, you know, repeat, there's seed in its fruit that you are having dominion over. You shall have them for food. And so why is that? Is it just to sustain them? Yes, but also to sustain them and for every other animal, but then also to scatter the seed so they can be fruitful and multiply. Because otherwise, how else are the plants going to, you know, be fruitful and multiply if the seed isn't going to be scattered? It's got to be scattered through the things that are created. And to every beast of the earth and every kind of bird of the heavens and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has breath of life, I've given you every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw everything he had made, and behold, it was very good. There was evening, there was morning, the sixth day. And so it's interesting, you know, then again, Paul, as he explains, right, you know, the different kinds of animals. He says there's humans and there's animals and there's birds and fish. And he's using, right, in verse 39, there's one kind for humans, one kind for animals, one kind for birds, one kind for fish. It's almost backwards in how Genesis 1 was laid out. But just says not all flesh is the same flesh. We know, right, that the flesh is different. And the seed and the end is different. And as all these things are different, why would you think that this idea of the resurrection is going to be the same? Right? And so the idea of the resurrection harkens us back to the initial creation. And so then he kind of even, at the end of this section, what does he talk about? Talks about as there's different kinds of, you know, flesh. Verse 41, he talks about this idea of glory. And what does he talk about when he talks about these the different ideas of the different aspects of glory? Yeah. Which is right there. After the plants are created, light was created earlier, but certain heavenly bodies were created for the seasons and for the stars. And we talked about light being a way for man to tell time and all of these things, right? And Paul, again, is going back, I have to assume, to Genesis 1. There's so much parallel that he's talking about when he is looking at the different kinds of what he says, glory. And so what does that idea mean? We have, when we think of glory, we have a couple different understandings, right? When it talks about, when we hear the idea of glory in terms of God, what are we to understand? And there's kind of a Hebrew aspect of glory that's been adopted by, you know, in a Greek sense, but we want to kind of understand how Paul is going to adopt it. But does anyone know what that Hebrew term for glory is? You guys heard of it? It's kind of this idea of a weightiness. And so it's like this term of God's fullness and how he is represented. But then in a kind of Greek sense, kind of adopting that same idea, right, that glory, when it's talking about an object, is its radiance or brightness. And so you can see those kind of two things coming together when we talk about God, right, being God being the one over all things, and there is this idea of light representing God. And Jesus would, you know, specifically when John kind of uses that language to talk about Jesus, that he is the light of the world, that we understand this kind of difference because light is associated with God, God being over light and the heavenly bodies and all of those things. And so when we talk about the different forms of glory, this different, and particularly as Paul's using it here, representing the different stars and moon and sun, is the different aspects of glory or radiance, right? Right now, what has the fullest, if we went outside, what has the fullest glory or radiance or brightness? It would be the sun. At night, it might be something different. Typically, it's the moon, right? Unless there is a new moon, then maybe some of the stars, and depending on where you live, then different stars have, even that has a different brightness to it. Some planets reflecting that light. And so this idea that Paul kind of talks about that there is a different type of flesh, but even with the stars, going back to creation in Genesis 1, there's a different aspect of brightness and radiance, and you know what he uses that term glory. It's going to be the same for the resurrection. The resurrection is going to be different. Like, is it going to be our same human flesh? I mean, we think, well, why not? But then you might say, well, why so?
Of course, at that point, the one principal example of the resurrection was, of course, Jesus.
Correct.
And of course, when he was resurrected, he returned in the same body that he had before he was crucified. So.
And for Thomas, what did he show him?
Yeah, the scars and the...
Exactly. But where were they when he first appeared to them, to the disciples?
In the room.
Where the door was what?
Right.
It was locked, yeah. And so there's a kind of this understanding. Well, there are those questions that kind of come up. From that, I mean, maybe Jesus slipped in amongst them and they just didn't know he was there until he like revealed he's the greatest magician. Or, you know, he just appeared. And did he just appear because he is Jesus, altogether different than what we would be like in the resurrection? Or is there something about the resurrection that gives us a physical sense, right, where he could eat fish with Peter by the campfire and he could appear to many and they would recognize him? But also then not recognize him as somebody that he had been with and spoken to and been around. And there's different, you know, explanations that people might give, but yeah, what does that look like? And how are you able to, you know, go through that? Or is that something that we will have the same thing? So those questions are... Exactly, yeah.
So it would have been, I think, you know, reasonable, normal for them to, you know, for them to make that association and having that guy, whatever thoughts they might have about it.
Correct.
But then he ascended, so things changed.
Right.
So at ascension, what happens? So there's a center of thing.
Yeah. I know, and so what happens in the in-between before he returns?
Well, it's Star Trek.
Is he up there now with a body? That's a great question. And the answer is we would say yes, because he had a body.
Well, but you don't need it physically to have it spiritually. You don't have to have a physical body. You don't have to.
Let's keep reading. Let's keep reading. So, and then next week, since I'll have a little bit more to go over, I think we'll go over some of these questions that kind of open up, like, so what are the things that we can start thinking about what heaven is going to be like? And yet all we have is scripture, and all we have, right, you know, we have, again, Jesus' example, and then we have what the authors say, and Paul doesn't elaborate too much. His focus is on there was a resurrection, and he gives us a lot of detail, but not all the details that we want. And even if he gave more details, there'd still be more questions that we have. But I think in the end, right, that there's this idea that there is a continuity about understanding. There is a similarity. When you catch a fish, you would say it has like a flesh, even though it has scales, and there is muscle, you know, under that can be eaten, similar to other animals, but it is different, but it is similar. You know, so there, again, there's a continuity of understanding about from one kind to the next. Again, all having to be made with the same ingredients, the same periodic table, and the same elements that God used in order to make things. And but there is a dissimilarity, right? Where fish have scales and we don't. And so birds have feathers and we don't. And so with the resurrection, it leads us to believe that there is probably something similar, as Paul is using this language, with the resurrection, a similarity but a dissimilarity. And how that looks, we don't know. We're not going to know all the mechanics, and even if we did, we wouldn't understand them. And even if we were told all these things, we just need to be left in awe of what God has done. And so with the resurrection, we just need to be there. So verse 42, back in 1 Corinthians 15, we'll finish up with this paragraph and then leave us for more questions next week. So, is it with the resurrection of the dead? What is sown is perishable, what is raised imperishable. It is sown in dishonor, it is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness, it is raised in power. It is sown a natural body, it is raised a spiritual body. If there is a natural body, there is also a spiritual body. Thus it is written, the first man, Adam, became a living being, the last Adam became a life-giving spirit. But it is not the spiritual that is first, but the natural, and then the spiritual. The first man was from the earth, a man of dust. The second man is from heaven. As was the man of dust, so also are those who are of the dust. And as is the man of heaven, so also are those who are of heaven. Just as we have borne the image of the man of dust, we shall also bear the image of the man of heaven. So Paul starts off, he says, what is sown is perishable. What does that mean? Perishable. What's that?
Destructible.
Okay. Right. And so I think some refrigerators still have that drawer for their perishables. Right. And so, those are the things that can go bad, can spoil. And not necessarily is like bad in a moral sense. They decompose, they give way, they expire, and we should not eat them. And so the seed, right, eventually dies, right? The plant withers and decays and the seed drops. And if it's fortunate enough, because not all seeds will germinate, then it grows. But there is death that is associated before there is life. And our life will come to an end, right? And we will die, and we will decompose, and we will perish. But what is the contrast that he says that is with the resurrection body? It is imperishable. It won't, right? It won't die. It won't decay, it won't spoil, it won't wither. And so then there is a continuity, a consistency. Will it grow older? Will it grow stronger? Those are the things that in our life, right, we grow and then we get to our end, right? There is a fluidity in our life that is going to, like, at what point you maybe can look back and say, that was the apex of my physical fitness, or maybe you're looking forward to that, your apex of your physical fitness sometime in your life, but there seems to be an apex, not multiple apexes, maybe it's a, but that's again, like, how our life is. And so with the resurrection body, it is imperishable, it will not die. And then he kind of gives these other contrasts between the earthly and the heavenly body. So first, what are all the descriptions that he gives of the earthly body? And he says that it is sown, it is scattered, it is planted for a particular reason that it will later give birth to something else. That there will be a resurrection body. And if it doesn't, like the seed that gives birth to a plant, it says then it returns to the dust, which is another conversation. Maybe we'll get to that next week. But let's go to the first one. What's the first description? It is sown in what? Dishonor. What do you guys think that Paul's getting with that? It's what? It's flawed. Okay. Born sinners. Okay. Yeah, and so you've got this idea that what we have right now in our perishable body, right, is not something that is at its peak. It's not honorable. It is sown in dishonor. And some would think that what Paul is talking about, he's actually talking about at your death, at that moment of death, right? What happens to you? Like, there's a nice service, right? And you're in a box. You're in a nice box. And they close the lid, and then you go in the ground, and then they cover you up, and that's your future, right? It's almost, in a sense, like, dishonorable in a sense where not, like, in a matter of disrespect, but you just go back into the earth. If you have a pet that dies, right, you dig a hole, you put the pet in it, you cover it up, and there it is, and everyone goes about their life, you know, as it was before. A little different, but that's, you know, Paul says there's just something like that's the end, and you're just put in the ground. He also says it's sown in what? Well, he says dishonor. What else? Sown in weakness. Okay, all right. What do you think he alludes to? Weakness. Yeah. As we were talking about earlier, right? And so, you know.
Even when you're not old.
Yeah.
Your body, you have limits.
Correct. Exactly.
In the prime of your life, you still have limits to your physicality and what you can do physically.
There's a top speed that only one human has, right? And no one will go faster than that. Or maybe one, slightly, but that's about it. And so you have, like, yes, a limitation on your strength and on what you can do. And we have that physically. We also know morally we have that same susceptibility, that we are weak. We are weak in our willpower and our physical strength, our moral strength, but also in our physical strength. We definitely know that is the case. It says we're sown natural. What do you think he means by that? Or physical, I think some translations say. Yeah, and we're part of a life cycle, right? You know, just we grow and then we wither.
We need a door.
Exactly. Romans 8:20 says, "For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it." And we'll get to that in a second. But this idea, right, that creation, all of creation, even us included, are subjected to futility. But he gives the descriptions of a resurrected body. And what are the descriptions that he gives for the resurrected body? What's the first one? What's that?
Imperishable.
Imperishable, yes. So we got that. Raised in glory. And again, remember that idea of splendor, brightness, radiance. So instead of dishonor going into the darkness of the earth and being covered with dirt, there's this idea of this resurrection of this. Even with Jesus in this ascension of when he went to heaven, there is this. And when he returns, it will be something that is, brighter and better than how most of us go. And just as, like, remember the different stars in the sky have a different brightness to them, we'll have a different brightness to us, and we'll reflect the brightness of our Father. What else does it say? We're not only raised in glory, but raised in what?
Power,
yeah. The contrasted to the weakness will be raised in power. We won't have the moral temptations, but we also won't have the physical inability. And so then what does that mean? Those are questions, right, that pop up, how old would we be? Like, and if we are similar, like, what age would I be similar to? Or is it just kind of something different, right? And then, it's the whole idea of, we'll talk about this again next week. If you recognize people, how would we recognize them, and what age are they? Or, it's this idea of power. And if we have, maybe as Neil said, like right now we have limits, will there be no limits to what we can do in the future? That would be odd. There has to be a limit, right, at some point. And so, but it just kind of gives us something to think about, something to, ponder over, but not question, but just curiosity. And then finally, instead of a natural, it says we were raised what? Spiritual, right? And so Paul wants to, again, to remind us of that this resurrection, when we talk about the body, we're so focused on the physical aspect of, what we're living in this life, and that was the some objections and skepticism that happens about, how do you even believe in a resurrection, is that we're thinking naturally. And Paul wants to pull us over and say we need to think spiritually, right? And we won't be governed internally by, our physical, natural desires, but we will be governed fully at full capacity by the Spirit. So it doesn't necessarily mean we'll have a spiritual body as in a spirit or a essence. We'll have a physical body, but we will be led fully by the Spirit. We won't have the temptations of the flesh. And so Paul just plainly states that, right? If there is a natural, then there is a spiritual, just given as a fact. The Greeks and the Jews would have acknowledged both of those things as a fact as well. Again, a little different than some of the skepticism we hear that when you die, this is it, that even our spirit, we have no spirit. Paul would say that seems something incomprehensible, even morally. But that's another discussion. So then Paul takes those two ideas, and then he returns to Genesis, but now he talks about the first man, and he talks about Adam. And what are the things that how does Paul describe Adam? Kind of has a few different descriptions for Adam. Okay, he's from the earth. What else does he say? A living being. Did I hear anything else? It says he was. Okay, what's that? No, that's the last Adam. He was first, right? So he was natural, and then he also described as a man of dust. But then how is the last Adam, who is the last Adam? Jesus, right? So how is the last Adam described, or Jesus is described as the last Adam? And it's just, he's described as what? A life-giving spirit from heaven. And then also described as a man of heaven. So you kind of have the contrast between Adam being the natural, being from the earth, a man of dust, a living being, right? We are in his image, right? So it's kind of, where do we fit in? And then if we are in Christ, we will be, you know, patterned after the man from heaven, a life-giving spirit. And so we have been born to bear the image of dust, but in Christ we will bear the image of heaven. And so if you kind of think of those two contrasts, dust or dirt, right, which is where we all will go in our physical sense, then what's the different forms of glory between dust and heaven? Hopefully it's a wide gap between those two ideas, right? And in Adam we are but dust, but in Christ we are in the image of the man of heaven. And so how should we respond? This idea, when you kind of think about all this, you know, to what Paul is saying, how should we take this in? Well, Paul says in Romans 8:19, again, he says, For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for adoptions as sons, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. So what should be our response to these things? Yeah. So we look at, you know, the difficulties that we have now, and we'll look at, you know, different passages later on, and the things that we are struggling with, we're subjected to, and we may groan with, because we have weakness, because we have frailties, because we have limitations, all of these things, because we are sown in dishonor. But in Christ, we have something much greater to look forward to. And Paul, again, just kind of mentions these things that, like, this is just like what the resurrection has, but he kind of gives us this, like, glimpse of hope, because then it does spur on, well, Paul, you said this, so does that mean, I don't know. I mean, that sounds amazing. That sounds great. And but eternity is a long time. How's that going to look? It's just something that we will look forward to, you know, and seeing all the things that God will do for us, for those that are adopted as his sons and daughters. And so he kind of sidesteps the foolish questions, but he doesn't like completely neglect them or ignore them. He gives us something that we can relate to with kind of sowing of seeds and understanding how that whole process works. And if we see a seed go into the earth, I mean, they didn't have those time-lapse videos just, you know, to look at, but they saw over time, like, things started in the ground and it was, you know, nothing, just dirt. And then eventually you have a whole field of green that produces crops for them. And then from those crops, they use the seed and the process starts all over. It just was something that they knew, something they understood. But just as it started with a seed, it ends with life. And just as our bodies will go into the earth, we'll be raised for something greater, something better. And so we'll look at how Paul kind of ends this, you know, this idea, and then entertain a few questions about what heaven may look like, and go to a few other passages. Any questions or thoughts?